Log Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Friday, everybody in New York. We are about to head into yet another snowstorm, and I know there's a few people up on the East Coast that have already been dealing with snow as we speak. So don't worry when you're not alone, because we're about to get it. All right, before I go into my regular shout-outs, let me take the time to thank God for my 2 7-year-old boys, Jared and Cameron. I want to say happy birthday to you. They turned 7 today. They had an eventful day, if nothing else, especially that mommy won them in a snowball fight, so I am the bomb. I will say that. All right. To Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 Kiss FM Radio, currently with isolradio.com, both in New York City. You can hear Barry spin his magic on isolradio.com on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m., again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is gracing the best of R&B events in New York at the best of venues as the CEO of Track One Entertainment Company. I've been saying this all week, so we're getting closer and closer to the big day. So, to those of you aspiring singers out there who have been looking for that big break to get in at least to be heard by some big-name people, if you have not yet been on the track1entertainment.web.com webpage yet to sign up, you still have time. Registration online in advance is on. You go to track1entertainment. Now, that one is a number, not a word. track1entertainment.web.com. Click on the So You Think You Can Sing flyer. Register now in advance for $25 or the day of the event at the door for $30, and you will have an opportunity to be seen and heard. Now, since February 11th is the second death anniversary of Whitney Houston, they're doing an honorary tribute to her in her name. And if you should happen to choose from their 1,200 songs of Whitney Houston tune to audition, you will receive an instant bonus point toward your final score. So head over there, get your progress started so that you can be in on this event. We will be there, those of us here at On the Edge, we are going to be there to assist Barry in getting all of you registered and in, and you get to meet us. So those of you who are listeners, come up and we'll shake your hands and say hello. We're happy to meet you. And to those of you that know of Barry, you know that you can reach out to him on his page, and if you are confused about anything, Barry is definitely sweet enough to let you know what to do. So don't miss out. And those of you that just want to come in and see, it's a $5 audience fee at the door, and you'll be able to sit down and watch the festivities, okay? All right. To my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yeves, to Monster Miles, to our wonderful DJ, Mr. DJ Domewrecker, Brody Williams, and to our wonderful active panelist who's constantly helping us on and off the air. He's constantly bringing us bridges to connections of outer areas with community problems and social issues. Dick and Betty Williams, I can't say thank you enough to you four people for being some outstanding team members and family to me. Okay, I want to thank my social media groups, the Real World Black Love, Black News and Discussions Group, the Black Love and Conversations Group, my new groups, the Capitalist End in Kentucky, to Mr. Marvin Young, thank you, to the Higher Science Research Institute, Professor Hawkins, who has been on this panel a bit, Universal African Improvement, and to the Black History Suppress Group. Thank you all very much for your continuous cooperation, participation, and support. I want to thank Stalo Jenkins. He has been here often, part of the panel, to Professor Carlton Jones with his intricate contributions, and to all of you who have now made us 20,650 listeners strong. Thank you all very much for what you do, and I hope all of you out there being safe. Now, we have been praying and grieving for the family of Avante Okendo. And just recently, there are now 4 missing teenagers in Camden, New Jersey, that have been reported missing as of 3 days ago. And we want to say that there is a war on youth, and it's ridiculous. Society is just failing them horribly, and they're getting caught up into some dangerous outcomes. So I'm praying that the families of all 4 of those boys are safe and receive their children back safely. That is my wish. Tonight's topic, everyone, is doors to the church are open, but after the break, we are going to be speaking on the role of churches as they once were, that have now been changed by mega church status, by TV ministries, by lack of open doors as they once were. Well, what effects does that have on the community, specifically the African-American community, although churches now not being as readily available as they once were, really affects our society on the whole, the mentality, the moral fiber, the reverence to what was once considered sacred and holy. All of these things are an issue, but tonight's topic is specifically about the black church as an institution that it once was, no longer being available, and how is it playing a role in our difficulties for advancement. Now, I do want to make it clear to my viewpoint callers, this is not a forum for you to air your personal views on whether or not Jesus Christ exists, whether or not pastors and priests are fake. It's not about whether you agree or disagree with Christianity or Muslim practices or anything. This is strictly about what the church as a community beacon once stood for versus the changes now, and how does that affect us as an African-American community that's struggling to advance as it is in the midst of everything else that we face. So you guys know how we do this. Early break, we're going to go out with a classic from Tina Marie and I Need Your Lovin'. Keep it locked right here, everyone. We'll be back to start this discussion, okay? Thanks all for waiting.
We'll be right back. New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. All right, we went out with Tina Marie, and I Need Your Love, and love that classic. Well, we are going to first shout out our sponsors for the evening, Professor Carlton Jones of the Harcum College in Pennsylvania and his team, the New Millennium Leaders, and their What About Us project. This is a project that's around to help empower and teach awareness to our youth of the African-American communities and minorities, and he does a fantastic job. He has fantastic stuff to say all the time, and it really keeps you thinking and keeps you aware. So, Professor, if you're out there listening, thank you very much, because what you give to the show is priceless. You can't replace it. So I want to thank all of you for doing that. Now, we have been having a continuous discussion on different aspects of what it is that, you know, we once had and no longer have in specifically the African-American community, because it is us that struggles more than any other race in America for advancement, for jobs, for placement in places that we need. So one of the things that we have been speaking on after the family structure, after the racism on the outside, we're focusing now on our internal shortcomings. So my question tonight is targeted at the church. Now, I want to make it clear once again, any of you that's responding to this topic, we are not trying to put the validity of anybody's faith on the fire. We are not going to be speaking about whether Jesus Christ is alive or dead or existed ever. I don't want to hear if you believe or you don't believe. What I am specifically talking about this evening is strictly about what the status of the church that was once a community beacon offering structure and resources to our communities as they once were, and how the changes that they've made, trying to be more TV ministries, more mega churches, you know, pointing the fingers now at the youth instead of opening their arms to them. These are the things that I want to discuss tonight. Now, I've got told by a few people in the pre-broadcast discussion that the two are one and the same. They are not. I can like George Bush's law and can't stand the man, but we were speaking tonight from the aspect of how the changes and the lack of options we once had in the black church, okay, no longer exist and is affecting our society. All right, so I see you there, caller. I'll bring you in just a second. We have now gotten to the point of dealing with all sorts of things we already know are in place from the outside aspect of the community. Okay, what we are speaking on is whether or not churches are as open as they used to be. So we definitely know that doesn't happen, not any further. Okay, we don't find churches as open and welcoming as they used to be. People are not coming to your homes anymore to pray over you or to find out what happened or what's wrong with your son. Nobody's welcoming the troubled youth in anymore to come into any community activities after school. The parent no longer can go to their church for support when they're having trouble raising their teen or dealing with their spouse. There used to be a time when churches used to open up their doors to find out exactly what was going on in the family. Like, for example, usually a family would come to church on Sundays. They were a happy couple at one time. The family was doing well. Suddenly, things are starting to go bad. The wife looks terrible. The husband is angry all the time or getting drunk. Then they come to find out that the husband just lost his job. Usually, we used to have churches that had such a strong connection to outside community resources or law or legal things that the churches knew a guy who had a job to offer. We used to go there for hunger problems, for problems with money, if it was that bad and it really was one of those things where we normally could do it, but something went wrong and now it's really tight. There wasn't a church in the community that didn't have some sort of program that was an outreach program to the people around them. So today, is the modernization of today's black church affecting the way we are struggling? Is that a big part of our struggles? That is the question on the table, and I'm bringing in our first panelist to start the discussion. So here we go. Welcome to the show, Paul. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Carlos Ellaby Jones, also known as Stalo Jenkins.
Hey, Stalo. Okay, well, we kind of have mixed it up a little bit on the outside of the air, so let's talk. We've been going at all of the struggles of our people pretty much to advance, to succeed, you know, to get things for ourselves. We spoke on entrepreneurship not happening because pretty much there are things we're not thinking to do or we're scared to do. Let's speak tonight about the role of the church as a community beacon. The mega churches taken over, the TV ministries, in your opinion, and if they have, in your mind, do you feel that that's a big part of why we're stagnated?
Well, in my mind, I would say that the church has definitely changed a great deal. And when I say the church, I don't just mean, you know, just the Baptist or just the Adventist or whoever. I mean every black temple, you know, be it a church, be it a Nation of Islam mosque, be it anything else, it just has always played a role in us organizing unity and on the ground, though, you know, in the community, and on the level that they knew what was going on within families, households, and the people that they did know, and they also reached out to the people, lost people as well, because, you know, scripturally, you know, it's all, you know, love thy neighbor and love thy enemy doesn't mean love that girl you don't like that you work with. No, it means even a person that's not living your lifestyle, you know what I mean? Even a person that's not, even a person that's not a believer. It was once a point in time where the mission was so strong and the mission was not overshadowed by all this modernization and the shiny things that the white man has given the church. Over time, all of them. You see what I'm saying? As they grow, and as they become mega churches and become so technologically savvy, they lose all of the groundwork. They lose all of the mission and the stuff that really was the substance of our movement. You know, here in Washington D.C., it was the chapel of at Howard University, the neighboring churches, Mount Airy Baptist Church, the Nation of Islam, Mosque Merriam, and all of the spiritual temples in the entire black world in Washington, D.C. played a role in every stride we made. And we've made many a stride. You know, you could say, politically, we've been knocked down, we've been coming back up. But if you really look at the history, the church is always going to play that role. And the thing is, a lot of people are watching these movies, right, and they take they take what they have rationalized from watching a movie, and the movie does depict, okay, there has been some it's growing, and that's what it is. The movie is showing you what's growing within the church now, the fact that there's now a lack of the church trying to do the grassroots work, because if they do the grassroots work and get that dirty in the mud, then maybe they won't gain this privilege, or maybe they won't still be in the light of these respectable people, you know. And I'm speaking specifically in terms of, you know, Queen and all the other slave movies. But people, you can't just watch slave movies and think you understand what the church is, or what any of this organization or doing this activism stuff or any of this stuff really is. It's not movies. Pick up a book or really study who you really, if you look up to anybody. Do you look up to anybody? Who do you look up to? Please don't tell me you look up to anybody in the mainstream now. But if you do, that's fine too. But look up some of the people that made this platform for us, you know. This platform. And as, you know, we got TV ministries and everything, but, you know, it's a lot of work that's not being done. As people grow, and now the church is kind of becoming a badge of honor in some senses. A badge of honor that some of us that don't want to be associated with the generation that's being villainized on the television screen every day, and the people that's being murdered in the streets all day, and the people wearing the hoodies and the baggy pants. They don't want to be associated with them. But they want to associate with not only a higher socioeconomic status. They want to say, I'm getting paid more than them, and I am not them. You see, they want to be separated, you know, and they want to be regarded as separate. When that's not even the spirit of the church, the spirit of God, the spirit of anything. You see what I'm saying? Once you start, and the thing is, if we watch the, okay, let's take Queen, for instance. This is an old movie, right? Came out, Alex Haley's Queen, right? In that movie, they showed the preacher when she said, oh, they're stealing my baby. They want my baby. They would kill me, send me away, anything for this child. The church said, they good Christian woman. Don't be saying that. Oh, don't be saying that. Why? Because the white man going to give the church the support they need, especially the white woman going to give it. If you really want to go into the movie, you know, think about this church. Think about what's going on here in the liberal world in the United States of America. Who has the numbers? Who has the power right now on the ground? It's not black business.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I remember that when we were growing up, if it wasn't your elders that was instilling going to church or spirituality or anything like that, or letting you believe that, you know, whatever problem you were going through, go to the church and, you know, God would find a way. But more so, in they try to make it apply to, like, the materialistic side of it. And don't get me wrong, for lack of a better word, I'm saying materialistic. Maybe I meant the more tangible solutions. You know, go to the pastor. You guys will probably pray it over, but then after that, the pastor would go out there and make some real solutions happen. Well, I see you. Just hang on a minute. Like I said in my commentary earlier, there used to be a time when that you would find a pastor or church members, pretty much, for lack of a better word, in your business. If you were a family that you see all the time in the community that was constantly out there trying to be encouraging, suddenly they were as bad as the people they used to try to encourage. There had to be a reason why that change took place. So the church used to come and get involved with it. Not so much because it was, you know, like a lot of people think, Bible thumpers or Jesus freaks or anything like that, but because what we believe and what the sacredness of the church is means that we were supposed to be standing above the scientific world of things, the karma, you know, things. So we're taught to believe, or we were taught to understand, that the church had a power. Physically, when you walked by a church, you sort of felt a bit of comfort, because it meant that no matter what you were going through, you could go there and you could feel good for a few hours.
Yeah.
Okay? The other thing is churches had power. They're tax exempt, so they were able to donate certain things. They're above the Lord to the point of, let me explain. They were above the Lord to the point of, like a Catholic church, if a criminal just stabbed the hell out of somebody and went to a priestess for confession, what was said in that confession was protected under confessional spiritual confidentiality. So no law could make a pastor tell you what was said, okay? Now, that sort of gave people a little bit of what you call solitude, but not to the point of I'm going to commit a crime and then go confess to my priest. That's not what I mean. I meant that if somebody was on their way trying to get back from what it was that they were going through because they felt that they were in it because there were no options, the church offered that type of understanding or projected belief that they could do something. Now, with that being said, despite the spiritual validity of it all, despite whether they're truly following God's calling or not, that's not the issue. The issue is, where are those people that come in and used to get involved with the youth that were standing on the street corner playing stickball and then doing something else, whatever? Where are those churches that opened their doors to having after-school clubs and community programs and block parties and community events? Where are those people who used to have their doors open very late at night where people could come in and feel that they can speak to somebody? They had somebody they could talk to. You know,
right.
It's not so much about what religion they were in, just the fact that that particular building meant something. It represented something. It represented moral fiber. It represented a place to go when you can't talk to people close to you, when you wanted an objective opinion. It represented, if I don't have a job, I could ask the leader of this church to put to keep an ear open for me. It represented that I need help with taxes or I need help with something. This is what you used to believe of the churches. Nowadays, you don't see churches open except maybe on a Sunday. And then you'll see them all through the week at 7 in the morning on TV, at 9 o'clock at night on some private network. You'll see preachers walking out, coming out of their parking lots in cars that look like you can, if you turned it in, you could buy your mansion and live in it.
Yeah.
You got people blessing us on TV ministries, promising that you'll have, you know, riches and lotto winnings if you pay all the money you have now.
Right.
So
right.
No longer are they giving to the community, but they're sucking it up and packing it up and leaving. These children now, if they're running from something that they really don't want to be in but are being told, listen, you either do this or you're going to get this, they have no place to go. Fathers and moms who are trying to remain a family have no place to go. You know, the world is turning them away. The jobs are not offering it to black people as much. They're finding everything they can not to qualify them with qualifications. So the one place that you could go where you could get not just some community physical resources, but if you were inclined to also some spirituality by your perceived belief, you know, no longer exists. Nothing about it is a beacon anymore. Let's bring in our other panelists for the evening one second. Welcome to the show, Carl. Are you on the air?
Oh, good night, KD and the panel.
Welcome, stranger. How are you?
This is Al Tariq. I'm all right.
All right. Well, Al Tariq, you heard what we've been speaking about so far, and you know the topic for tonight. So tell me what your viewpoints are on it.
Okay, well, you know, as far as on the foundation of movement and stuff like that, since we've been here, you know, and been allowed to practice religion at all, you know, it came through the church, you know, as far as us being taught the ways of, you know, our former slave masters. But when it comes down to it, you know, the church was that place that we could relate to as far as what we had. And as far as what we had, we did the best with what we had, you know, and that's like how you said, it doesn't have anything to do with, you know, the past and what we may have known in the past as far as religion or anything like that.
And
how we constructed things in our community from the church, because the church was still our foundation. And, you know, and basically, you know, for the most part, it really has a big effect today. you know, as far as, I'm not saying a big effect as far as what it's all helping to do, like how I may have tried to at one time in the past, but what I'm bringing it to is that I believe the reason why it's not is because in part of what you said, and I said that on the comments on Facebook, you know, that now since it's tax exempt, that's really hush money. And it's a lot of people out here hurting now, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it's just as bad now as it was back, or worse, is when Martin Luther King was here. When he spoke, I checked out some of him about a week ago, and when he was talking, it sounded like he was still alive talking right today with all the issues that we were facing back then, about poverty and stuff like that. And it's going on right now. So I'm like, man, I said, this is haunting because he sounded like he just got up out the grave, flesh came back on his skin and started talking. And I said, because we're confronted with the same issues. All these wars going on, you know, mm-hmm. no one's speaking out against them. We're riding with them, rather we're in a church or whatever. We just go along. And the church was built, premise of the church as far as the spiritual aspect, you know, was for you to go against those things which were wrong and to point them out, not to be silent, you know, but to point out the wrong and try to redeem those things, redeem people from the wrongs and stuff like that. But when you look at, and I see why it is the way it is in the church, and that even I believe that it's been, like, used as far as our community really to our disadvantage, you know, within how you say it being modernized. But I believe that that was really the purpose a long time ago, you know, and you're seeing the effects of it today because they've always planned against us. It don't matter if we was in the NOI as far as the Nation of Islam, the Moorish sign, no matter what we're in. It was like Malcolm said, if you black, it don't matter the religion. It's just the fact that you are black. If you're a Muslim or however you say you are, they are really against you advancing. And that's what it boils down to, bottom line. But I understand perfectly well what you were saying about the church and us meeting there and being there to resolve issues, people trying to help out, you know, with what they could and stuff. But now it's all about money. It's become like how it says in that book, how it says in the Bible. It's become like that as far as like how I say, the den of thieves and stuff like that. People are all in the name of Caesar in this day and time. The same way that when they ask, they say they ask Caesar, you know, what are you, you know, as far as taxes, what do you render to Caesar and stuff like that? He said, render unto him what is his and unto God what is his. Morals and stuff was not the plan, actually, it was a despise by those who put us in this place. There was nothing moral about slavery, not one bit.
Right.
So if you're going to be saying that we supposed to be a moral country, treat people, your neighbors as yourself, love them as yourself, that was never done from the beginning. There was no love there. It was money-making there. It was being treated like cattle and all that type of stuff, you know. So it's always been about profit. It's never been about a profit. It's been about money profit, not about profits that was trying to redeem, you know, people's souls and stuff like that and get them back on the right track as far as them erring in their ways. That's never been the goal here. So with us, you know, economics, and Dr. King, he recognized that before he was murdered, and I even seen him on something on YouTube pointing that out. He said, hey, we got to start investing in our own. You know, it's about economics.
Right.
Right before you came on, KD, I read something, and I'm going to read it. It's just something little. He said, it's by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He said, true individual freedom cannot exist without economic independence. People who are hungry and out of a job are stuff that dictatorships are made. And I said, oh, so this is the plan then.
Indeed, but we know this. We know that, of course, the rich pretty much run things. We know, or at least people with a good amount of money have decision power. We also have been speaking that our community in particular either allows ourselves to get caught up in things because if they waive, I think that I brought it up in a previous segment where I said we're kind of falling victim to the cash and carry mentality. Okay, mm-hmm. Where if we can't see it, touch it, feel it, or carry it with us, we're not investing in it. We're not going to think twice about it. The whole thing is that's what the church once represented, places where you could go. I remember about three churches in a place in Brooklyn because I am a pastor's daughter, as I explained previously. Okay, I remember watching community leaders come together with local churches, not for voting purposes, not for election polls, but for throughout the year issues. And I remember there was a program that was implemented for adults who did not finish school to get their GED and try to go from there. I remember children who had trouble with school having a place in the church to go to for some after-school activity that had nothing to do with Sunday service. It wasn't about Bible class. It wasn't anything. These were community people who needed a space to put. I don't know what's going on there, but please. These were community people that reached out to the church leaders, okay, and found a place, a way to make an arrangement to hold their community meetings there, to hold their after-school programs there. And then the leaders would find out what the program was about and find out what it offered. And they would find ways to reach that out or add it to their billboard of things that they offer. It wasn't just about people walking out there to point their fingers in your face and scream about Jesus. It was about you actually doing something. Community town hall meetings were done in churches. Schools, community talent shows were done in churches. I remember another church that had an exercise group for parents who didn't have time because they're running back and forth between the kids. So there are things that these buildings and these people, as a community beacon, as Professor Carlton Jones sort of helped me simplify. We don't have that community beacon church anymore. Everybody's trying to run off to see which network will take them up and let them be seen on TV. And if they're not doing that and they are the last of the churches open in the neighborhood, and to those of you who the shoes don't fit, I'm going to say again, don't wear them. There are a lot of still open churches right now that are all about just pointing the finger along with the rest of society. They're turning their nose up higher and stronger than people you go to for a job. So there was another church that I used to go up around because, believe me, there was almost a church at every corner in my neighborhood. And one didn't have, the other one did. And there was one where it was even teaching children from high school and up how to apply for jobs, how to fill out interviews, what kind of things you must answer on an application, and what is against the law. They were teaching them how to dress, how to speak, how to act on an interview in a professional environment. They were teaching them how to grow up to be strong leaders and not trend followers. And it wasn't, when that was over, the word of God came in, yes. But from a community support structure status, the doors closed to the church have been a big effect on our local communities, period. There were churches that would allow businesses to speak about their products or their services or explain in a setting where everybody came and was convened at one time. Financial issues were discussed. Financial donations were given. Fundraisers were held. And it went back into the community. People were learning how to, there was another church that I went to that was teaching music to children from instruments. Not how to be an auto-tune worker or how to synthesize something by means of mechanical devices, but how the hell to sit down and read music, how to count to a beat, how to sit there and know how to blend in and harmonize with people. Choir practice doesn't even happen anymore. These are things that used to take place that were arts or options for kids. Sometimes kids used to just come in there and use choir practice to laugh at people who couldn't sing.
And then they got told by people that's not the way you behave. And then eventually one of them will wind up being fascinated with what they already didn't want to join. So it gave them some structure. Where are all these people now? Our children are already absorbed by the strongest limbs on their arms and bodies being their for PlayStation controllers. So we don't need another TV damn ministry. We need pastors to be out there face-to-face, shaking hands, doing what they used to do, asking what your problem is and really looking for a solution. We need them to stop getting over into the megachurch shaking my head syndrome and get out there shaking their legs like they used to. Because there was power. As far as tax exemption being hush money, long before all of that took place, that was established that not-for-profit and religious institutions were not liable for taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was because it was understood that they would be able to kind of run independently. And as much as we speak on black people being oppressed by the outside, our black churches were institutions that were able to economically sustain themselves. There wasn't anything you couldn't go to a church and get and not get. And if they didn't have it, they knew someone that they could send you to get it. I remember churches opening up and actually giving meals to people who didn't have it. Real people standing there on their days off in aprons and gloves and soaked up in flour because there were kids on the street that didn't have parents who were home right after school and they didn't know how to cook for themselves. I remember them having after-school daycare issues. Options. I remember that being a thing where we talk about that village that raised a child. Black churches used to be that institution. And for those of you listening who are not of the African-American culture, we're not saying that other culture churches didn't do the same. We're speaking strictly on the advancement stagnation of African-Americans being attributed to closed churches. Well, it used to be our strongest, one of our largest majority, strongest points of support, and not for religious purposes, because if any of you can remember, when churches used to stand out there and give out food or give out flyers for things that was coming up and inviting you to community events, they never said this is all contingent upon you coming to Sunday service. They said it's a community event. Bring your children, bring your friends. And from there, whatever came out of it was on the person themselves. There are people that used to show up. I know the church I used to attend, you wouldn't see nobody there on Sundays, but put out an announcement that they were going to have a free trip to Bear Mountain or a trip to Bear Mountain. Suddenly everybody had money. Everybody showed up. People who did attend the church every week didn't have seats on the buses that were provided because people brought their families who didn't even know where the church was except for that day. So don't tell me that churches weren't a structure of support of some point without there being an attachment to being obligated to serve. People had things to do with the church. People had places and solace and solitude with the church. Criminals had a way of feeling like they were going to be in conflict with what they were doing, and they needed a place to go to think it through without their, you know, friends that they have to post for. Or without feeling like, you know, one of their friends is going to be watching them run to the police station and thinking they're a snitch. There were so many things that an open church offered to any sort of person. People wouldn't dream of robbing a church, which is why usually they were usually in place to be some support. And now that we're speaking on that, okay, nowadays with the status that it takes or that it seems to come with to a person that robbed in a church or shot up something or burned down a church, this is one of the things the church used to offer. There was some sort of perceived reverence for the building itself or for what came with it. So there was a little bit of some sort of platform where you could still reach the people that was deemed unreachable. There was still something there that the church brought in their minds that instilled some fear and respect. No matter what they did to the community, you wouldn't see them sitting in front of a church with a beer. And if, even if that didn't stop them from actually drinking beer, they wouldn't do it in certain places. So it gave them a little bit of etiquette to a point. And churches are responsible as a community organization. Because if we want to, let's take all of the religious aspects of the church out of it. The United States business laws state that any new company or any establishment or any organization that wants to come to the licensing board to be recognized as a functioning business or a functioning organization or listed as anything must prove not only that they're going to pay taxes, but they must prove what are you going to give back to the community that you're opening up in. And if that's a business law, and every business in a proposal must have a mission statement and a goal, why is it that we as the people who need them, that we as the people who strive on community organizations helping us bridge the gaps, why are we sitting back and allowing them to dry up the wells? And for those of you that need me to be a little more explicit in what I just said, I'm not speaking about the money wells. I'm speaking about all the other stuff in addition to financial gain. We need to stop having these leaders come in and ask for building fund donations and tithing, and then have only those people who donate be considered worthy of saving or worthy of accepting or helping. We need to stop having these leaders not do what they say they're going to do with the donations they're targeting to do. You can't say that we need you to give us money to the building fund and don't build the damn thing. Steve Harvey had a little skit that he did in the Kings of Comedy where he spoke about growing up in the church, and he said that, you know, every weekend they're talking about the building fund, ain't put a damn doorknob on the church. Yeah, it's funny and it's true. Very few churches in the late of days can show what the building fund actually built. That's something else that we people who are giving our money, believing that we're giving it to a better cause or a good cause that'll bring us something good in our life. We need to stop allowing this to happen. And then after all of that, they pack it up, get a flight to Maui somewhere, and come back with Lexus. Lexus, which, by the way, they're so busy trying to keep hot wax and spit shine that now prayer comes in between the PDA schedule, between hair and makeup and airtime. You can no longer go and ask for support, not any longer. You can no longer say, I'm going to Pastor Wallace to go and let them know that you're trying to get involved with the wrong people. The single mom or the single father no longer has that village support from a community beacon facility to find out what it is that they can't reach their own child with. Usually, a leader in that position can. There's a panelist coming in. I need to bring them in. Just wait 1 second. Welcome to the show, Paul. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and God bless everyone on the panel.
Oh, good evening. You are a perfect person for this topic tonight. I'm going to finish my point, and I'll hand the mic over to you. It's just that, you know, churches do have a responsibility to the community, for sure. And, of course, even though we're not speaking on it, of course, even further up, they are, by all laws and intents and purposes, supposed to have a higher power that they answer to. So their community outreach is really part of the interwoven obligations that go along with it. But getting back to, like I said, the community standpoint of it, where are the community block parties that's supposed to be leading people to betterment? Where are these job fairs that once used to be sponsored by your local church to connect you with something in your field that can help you and your family right now? Churches never were about just giving hands out. They were about making hands up, helping you connect with your own natural ability to go do something for yourself so that everybody now can become a bigger web. Deacon, your thoughts on tonight's topic.
Oh, Wow. First of all, I would like to say that the way the church, some of the churches, not all now, are looking, it's like because they're stuck on a lot of self my Lord, about themselves and not about God's people. In the word it says, if you love me, feed my sheep. And in today's society, you don't see a lot of that being done. The word also says, beware of false prophets. And if you don't know the word and if you don't know Jesus for yourself, how can you tell the difference? It's up to us. We can't depend on that man that stands up there in the pulpit and rely on everything that he says, because he's just another man just like we are. He's another, or she's another woman just like you are. You know, and if we have in our heart, if you know, God knows the good that's in all of us. And he knows us better than we know ourselves. And what it is that it seems like there are more out here that are trying to do for themselves than it is that they're trying to do for God's flock. And it's a sad situation. But for me, for myself, I don't depend on that man to stand up there in that pulpit. I know what's inside of me. I know Jesus for myself. I know where I've been, what I've been through, and I know who got me through all of that. And it's not for me to stand up and try and debate with someone about that situation, because nobody knows my resume but God. And so for someone to try and speak against on my beliefs, it just goes over the top of my head. It doesn't even bother me. At one point it used to. That's because I was still growing as far as being a born-again Christian. But the way things are today, is very sad, and we need to start paying more attention to what's going on in the world, because God is trying to speak to all of us. And we are so busy being distracted by other things, because that's the way the enemy plays games and wants to play mind games with you and take you off of, take your mind off of the things that are more important. And the more important thing is that you keep your mind stayed on God's word. And that's not happening today, and it's very sad.
And like I was, we're speaking, you know, strictly from the church as a community agency. And
right.
Them drying up the doors and them taking out all of the physical resources that we once had. In turn, where God's word does come into it, once people are in, they definitely have to do that, to bring in what the church is about. Speaking strictly today from just the point of community connections, what the church once stood for people trying to get jobs, for children that didn't have a place to go, for children that were led wrong and didn't get along with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that more of that is happening? Do you feel that what we are facing as a stagnant, stagnation of trying to progress is a major role because our biggest institution is closing their doors?
Right. Well, I do feel as though they're not doing as much as they used to. You know, because when I was coming up, I remember how the churches used to be involved with members of the congregation. The pastor used to come over and sit down and have dinner with the families and ask different questions about how the family is doing, if they're having any struggles, and how can the church help them. You don't see a lot of that happening anymore, because for the simple fact you have a lot of these religious leaders are more concerned about they call it the mighty dollar, but the dollar is not that is really not that mighty when you really look at it, because you have to look to the Father for all your needs, and He will provide all your needs. But like I said, it's not happening like it used to. It's not happening. People are more focused on trying to be big mega churches, and the mega churches are the leaders of these mega churches are riding around in these big fancy Italian made suits and all these diamonds and glitter on their hands and driving around in Rolls Royces and things like that. And that's not the way it should be.
That's
where we're at this moment. And we are speaking strictly, like I said, we were speaking a little earlier before you joined us, Deacon, on just what you said. Pastors used to sit with the family. And while
right.
sitting at dinner, they used to find out or get to the heart of the problem with the family. They used to find
right.
out why Tommy is not being as good as he used to be. They found out why Mr. Jones is not the active person that he used to be, be it because he used to be an active Sunday member or cooperative
mm-hmm.
with us team, or now he's just an angry drunk. Why is he angry
right.
drunk? The thing is that nowadays it seems like more churches are pointing fingers at the problem and not getting to the source of it. And that
right.
used to be what they did as a community beacon. That's what they used to do. They used to sit there and get to the heart of the problem from a social standpoint, from a community standpoint. And, of course, because of who they are, they brought in the spirituality of it. But we're speaking, like I said, directly on what their community resourcing, drying up the resources, I should say, has affected our role in trying to move forward. And we can't
right.
move forward if the biggest place that we once had as a fallback is failing us.
Right.
You know, you brought up something earlier. It wasn't just the black church as we know it. Usually when people say black church, they're thinking about all the Baptist churches that jump and praise and have the Holy Ghost on the beat of a drum or something to that effect. We're speaking about there were black mosques for Muslims.
Yes.
There were temples that were out there that served on a different day than Sunday. But I can guarantee you knew about the community barbecue. And in that barbecue, you found somebody who was running it to tell you that they knew what you needed and they had a place you can go. They had a place
right.
for your youth. They had a place for the man who didn't have a job. They had a place for the person who needed further education or help with their education. These are all things that empower a community. These are all things that they're closing schools, people.
Yeah.
So schools, which was the next biggest important drive or factor in the engine, is now being closed up. And if it's not that, if they're not doing that, they're trying to make sure your kids get to school regardless of weather conditions, of dangers in the road, of whatever it takes. If they're not doing that, they're busy telling you that if your children do well all year but freeze up on a state test, that what they did all year doesn't count and they're stupid. So you used to have the churches in place to have somebody in the community, be it a school, be it a higher learning education center, be it an adult education center, that would sit there and say, after school on Thursdays and Fridays, we have the after-school tutoring program, totally free.
Right.
And then even if it was a low-cost situation, because everybody has to try to survive somehow. Even if it was a low-cost program, if you were a person that couldn't even afford the low cost, either somebody sponsored you in that church and paid for you, or you were welcome anyway.
Yeah.
There's so much that the churches offer. That's not just about the physical, tangible things that you can hold in your hand. There was people that felt like something because even though their circumstances were not financially well or they weren't considered, you know, the popular family on the block, the church offered their welcome. The church came in to say, well, this is the problem. You don't worry about that. What's going on? What can we do?
Right.
You don't get people even coming to your house to know that you're sick, and you could have a house right down the block from the place you attend.
Right. Well, you know, the church that I'm a member of here does quite a bit. They have a college outreach, and they have a scholarship fund. They have family outreach programs to where if a family has happens to be having problems financially, we reach out to them as far as finding out some of the things that they need as far as food, clothing, and stuff like that. And we have those drives like that. And that's the way all churches are supposed to be relating to the people out here that are supposed to be members of their congregation. There's no way that you have church members in your church that have wants and needs, and you can't at least try make an effort to help them in this situation until they can, you know, be able to stand up on their own. That's why you're supposed to be in that type of business, you know. And when that's not happening with a church, I can't see myself being a member of a church that doesn't do some type of thing to help. You know, it's like, you know, we get together and we send food baskets to college students that are members of our church. And then some of their friends, they may meet somebody at college that's pretty much struggling at school, and we find out some of the needs that they might need and try and help them out also, and they're not even members of our church.
And that's what the church is supposed to be. They're
right.
A community beacon. That's what they are. That's what they are. They're exempt from the government. There's certain things that they can do that the government can't interfere with. And this is our forum. This is where we can go in and have our meetings, have our shout outs, our sound offs. This is where we can celebrate our own achievements when the government won't. This is where we can acknowledge people who are doing something above and beyond their call.
Right.
When you're drying up the doors because you're trying to go with the mainstream Hollywood link,
right.
And finally every network will show you, or you can flash your bling, or you can do whatever, come Sunday morning. It
right.
used to be that churches were open throughout the damn week. Now you can barely see some open on a Sunday. And
right.
if you are open on a Sunday, they're pointing fingers at who's coming through their door.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want you, Katie, to laugh at me, but I will drop a name, and the name of the church that I'm a member of is called Family Baptist Church, and the leader of that church is Pastor Charles McBee. So if anyone happens to be stopping through Toledo, give us a visit. You will be welcome, and we will show you the hospitality that you're supposed to be shown when you come to visit us.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful thing to do. And you have to celebrate who's doing well. You have to get on who's not. The churches, the schools, your small businesses in the area, all of these things are supposed to be thrown into the pool of re-empowerment. Everybody that's not on this show and on social media talking about all the big articles that show yet again what we already know exists. We already know that nobody on the outside is trying to help us get better. We already know that we are one of the most oppressed and punished for whatever reason, race that there is. We already know that. We already know that there are people who will do the same crime from different cultures and get lesser sentences, if any.
Right.
But we don't want to talk about what we already know. We need to talk about what we're going to do about it.
We need to. So
we need to talk about what we're going to do about it. Okay, we need to get up there and say, open up your doors. This is where it used to be. What are you doing? We're here every week doing whatever. And for those people who are able to give their 10% in the church, you should have that mouth to speak for the rest of us. Or you should encourage
right.
the rest of us to be there with you as you speak.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as, Stayla, what you brought up earlier about movies, about slavery, the key word here is movies, people. They're not going to tell you every single thing that really took place, the horrible, real horrible things. They'll show you as much as the MPAA ratings allow. And they're going to filter out what's too graphic for their own purposes to allow it to be seen in mainstream. So if you need somebody to give you a Hollywood watered-down version of what the hell you went through,
right.
something is seriously wrong with the links here.
Yes.
There's nothing about a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, sir.
No, and I was saying that's what we need to be targeting, the youth, because this is the type of thing that they take as knowledge these days. These days, knowledge, occupation, their best friend is all in a little television screen that they look at all day. Now, we got to call out all these institutions, all these churches. If you're not in the streets
right.
looking for these children, looking
yes.
for these children to save these children's lives, these impressionable children. Because anything that we've gained thus far through our activism through the church, Martin Luther King himself organized the March on Washington in a chapel.
Right.
Okay.
So at the end of the day, if y'all not in the streets, if anybody's not in the streets and you are part of any institution, you need, I mean, at the end of the day, since all churches are tax exempt, that means all your taxes, you know, everything that you owe society, okay, everything I owe society is to be done by these institutions.
Right, right.
Not me. Honestly, not me. So as an institution, if you don't take it that seriously, you're a laughable institution altogether. So at the end of the day, attacking these institutions soon. You know, at the end of the day, you got to be in the streets. You know, in Washington, D.C., I mean, think about it. Because a church is supposed to be like a nation and independently run, it was made for us. This is made for us to progress. However, we have people that want to act like the white man, for lack of a better term. You know. So
but you know,
let's treat the ones that want to act like the white man, I'm going to treat you like the white man. Because I'm going to at Park Naylor Road, Southeast Washington, D.C., in the streets looking for these children to save their lives every day. I call out, I reach out to these churches, and many of them reach back out. But the mega churches, the ones with the big money, there was once upon a time in D.C., there was only through the church was black people fed. Now, when I say fed, I mean the hell with the Korean curry out, not saying anything about a Korean. But there was black churches who fed the whole community.
Right.
Right, right.
Food they deemed appropriate. And as we reach higher levels of learning and understanding of what we need nutritionally, then the church should deem appropriate something more elevated for us to eat and continue to feed us. That's not happening. So, you know, that's not happening. And you hear all these feeding programs, they feeding the kids, they feeding the kids, I feed children every day. I have to. Okay? Now, many churches, though, aren't doing that. And that's what the government is giving money out to do, first and foremost. First and foremost. So we need to be feeding the kids. And we need to be feeding everyone. In fact, food is the way the church has already, is always posed to have gone anyway. Food, shelter, children, orphans, and widows. So elderly and kids. It's how it's supposed to work. So if it's working for anything else, now I say that's a tackle. Because now, you know, I run an academic reinforcement center, 2574 Naylor Road, for anybody in Washington, D.C. But from now on, how about institutions who aren't affiliated with any spirituality, but who are out here doing the work? I call all of you to reach out to the churches, and I call the churches to reach back out, and everybody to get together. And if you don't, you know, I say be public about it, because everything's public nowadays.
Right.
Listen, if you're going to use the internet to have these recycled conversations about something that is in place and you're doing nothing about it, then might as well take it and do something with it. And if these churches do want to go digital or technological, let it be to further what they've already started, what once was progressive. And that's where we listen. You can't ask your church members to up the ante every week in offering because you want to get X, Y, and Z, and then you get nothing in X. Y is out the window, and Z never existed. You can't do this. And like I said, and I'm peeking, like I said, obviously, Family Baptist Church is not one of the people who need to be wearing these shoes.
Right.
But we're not, I just need to make this clear, apparently. When we're speaking on these issues, if you are not one of those people who fall into the guilty category of this particular topic, then kindly listen, observe, and move on with speaking to somebody who doesn't know or who is guilty of it. Because what you don't look at outside of your own backyard affects your backyard in the long run.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's get over to comparing the churches, as we said before. If this was a Red Cross or somebody who asked to be opened up as an outreach place that's going to offer solutions. And if it was a Red Cross, and Red Cross say we're going to go out to countries that don't have water, we're going to help people in flood relief, in disaster relief. And then there, you don't see a Red Cross van after the disaster is over anywhere in the neighborhood during the cleanup. Then they're not doing their damn jobs.
Correct.
And they've taken away an option that everybody expects to be in place when these things happen. So why is the churches any different?
Right.
And why would,
you know,
why would churches be in place waving the flag of, come here, we have solutions, we can help, we could do whatever, and then turn around and say, I've had enough of this, I'm going to go on TV. We don't need another set of TV icons.
Nope.
We don't need it. Our children don't move as it is. Okay? Our adults are busy on the computer more than their own. So listen, we don't need you TV ministries.
That's their
we need
favorite.
The power to be back into the community.
Joe, it's the street ministry.
Yeah.
Yeah, try that. Try that. Try being on BET Street and not BET Network. Not my word.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have to take a sponsor break. So, instead of my song, because I just got news that my Knicks kicked butt and hold, I'm going out with the Knicks theme and the word from our sponsors. We will be back in just a minute.
All right.
Place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, Attorneys at Law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. KD and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
Now, back with more On the Edge.
Let's go, New York. You go, Knicks. That's what I'm talking about. Beat the Bobcats down 125-96. All right. Back to the topic tonight, everybody. bringing our panelists back in one at a time. Salo, are you there?
Can you hear me?
All right, delayed reaction. You skipped there for a minute. Yeah, I can hear you. Al Tariq, are you back?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Bring in Ben Zeke Deacon, and we have a new panelist. 1 second. Deacon, are you there? Hello, Deacon William. Welcome to the show, Cole. Are you on the air?
Yes, I am. Hi, Katie.
Hi, who's this?
Aureen.
Okay, you're on a different number.
Oh, okay, you're right. I am using my spare phone.
Okay, hi, Darlene. You already know. Yes, I do. Okay, Deacon, are you back with us? Deacon? All right, Deacon will chime in. Deacon, are you there? All right. Okay. All right, ladies, you're up. I'll start with you, Arlene.
Well, basically from what I was gathering, which discussing the importance of the church as an institution and the part that it needs to play in the community. And when we were growing up, church was really, really fun for me as a kid growing up. There were just so many activities and trips and dinners and love, you know what I'm saying, that I don't feel in some of the churches that I've been to myself as an adult. I've been to maybe 4 or 5 churches, and a lot of them is fashion shows. You know, the women in there, they compare themselves to each other, what they got on, who wore the same thing last week. It was disheartening, and it was such a big turnoff for me that I don't go nowhere near as much as I would like to, because I feel like you're supposed to be, I know you're human, don't get me wrong, I know you're still human, but you're supposed to be setting an example in the role that you play in the church, you know what I mean? And for you to come out the church and swear and party and drink and curse and smoke a cigarette and all of that, and then soon as we get behind back into the church doors, you're going to hell because this, that, and other. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, don't listen to the messenger, listen to the message. But it's hard to listen to the message when somebody blowing cigarette smoke in your face, alcohol in your face, you know what I'm saying? So I'm just keeping it real on that note. I've been to Brooklyn Tabernacle, downtown Brooklyn, and I found that church to be the one that has the door wide open for all nationalities. It's white people, black people, purple people, orange people. I do see them give back to the community Thanksgiving. They give out the whole turkey meals to people who can't afford a Thanksgiving meal, and they do have a big program for Christmas. And, yeah, they take, but they give too, you know. And it is about giving back as well. You know, a lot of the ministers, we used to be able to go and touch their hand, talk to them for a minute. You can't even get to them now because they so hot up. You got to go through like 3 or 4 people before you can even get to the pastor. And me, I like a church where I could go to where it's no barriers to my pastor. Your congregation is not so big that you don't have time for your congregation. That's what it's supposed to be about, too, not just preaching the word, but being able to give a word on an individual basis and a support system. And the churches that I see so far are really not set up like that. And it used to be a really positive force for me as a kid until I got older, and then, like, reality was setting in. And I'm not trying to judge, but I mean, like, if I'm going to hell, then I guess you're going with me.
I was speaking earlier, I don't know how long you were on, but how there was almost a program at every church that benefited the community. If one church didn't have a specific program, the next one did. And
yes,
you could go to get food from you know, let's say, you know, Seventh-day Adventist Church and go to the next one and get a GED program, go to the next one. You had an after-school program. So all of these things benefited us to a point, and there was not one place that you couldn't go that was a church that didn't have something you needed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't something. And the thing is now, you didn't find a pastor, at least not publicly, that was ridiculing somebody who was poor or a kid that was having trouble or somebody, you know, who dressed a certain way. They actually encouraged them. If it was a girl that dressed too provocatively for church, they would direct them to the female leaders there to have them learn some etiquette or to instill some self-respect. If it was the boys that were acting a certain way, they would have the men of the church embrace them.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those things. It's like now you'll see the women come out the church is not whispering so loudly you can hear them down the block about the girl who came to church with the shorts. You're hearing, you know, when they are open, by the way. And if not, you're hearing the guys are like, yeah, right, I ain't dealing with them. And meanwhile, mm-hmm. more of our teens were headed into church to pick up girls.
Come on.
So where exactly are you sitting up here now doing the job you once did, doing what people once expected of you, and you're too busy drying up the church doors so you can open up the network doors? Enough. We have enough people sitting on their behinds doing nothing, watching the TV and clicking a remote on their high-definition TVs. I don't need to sit here and see Reverend Jones in 3D in my living room telling
mm-hmm.
me to please put out $10 I don't have for a $2 cloth and a $1 oil for a blessing I may or may not receive.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to be out there and ask Mrs. Jones why Tommy Jones isn't doing good in school anymore so that you could find out he used to have an after-school program that the school's budget just cut and we need an alternative.
Yeah,
Children are consistently seeking for something. And if they don't have it in the place they used to go, they're going to look someplace else. And where that someplace else lands them is up to us.
Yeah.
Darlene, you're up.
Hi, Katie. Hi, panel.
Hi.
For me, Katie, you know, I have a good memory as a child coming up in the church, because as my sister stated, we had all of these activities, events, and we had some love, and we had mothers. We had like 35 mothers. Every mother that was in the church was our mother. Every father that was in the church was an elder. Our elder was our father, you know, or our uncle or our brother. They showed us that type of love. Today's churches, for me, to me, they lost focus of what church was really about. Church was supposed to be a temple where people came together who believed in God and had a strong desire to seek God out in their life and have him in their life. I think the focus is totally gone. The reason why I say that is because our pastor was a regular human being. These pastors today, you know what's a real turn off for me? Okay, when a pastor is delivering a sermon, when he get up there and say, you know, I was in my yacht the other day, and my wife said, you know, You got people that don't even have a plate of food, but you want to brag about your yacht. What does that have? Listen, you can deliver a message without grand, you know, like grandstanding. These ministers do not have any humbleness in them today. They, there's a difference in a humble pastor than a man that thinks that or believes that he's closer to God than anybody else. They lose the total focus that you are only God's messenger. You are a human being. You are only his messenger. He put you here to carry the message, not to judge, not to point fingers, not to tell somebody you going to hell. Your job is to let him know, is to let us know about God and allow us to receive him in our own way. That's what's sending a message is, not shoving it down my throat, not telling me, you know, well, you going to hell, you know, that is not your job.
No,
that's not your job. Your job is to state the Ten Commandments. Your job is to tell me what's in the scriptures. Your job is to make me feel comfortable with what the message you are giving me, not condemning me, pointing the finger, and judging me. You know, nobody has humbleness in them today. Where's the humbleness? You know, the gentleness, the caring, the softness. Where's all of that? It's out the window. And, you know, now they don't even care to a point where they come straight out of the church and get in their Cadillacs and their Beamers and their limos and, you know, and it's sad because you're taking that money from the community and you're riding all the way to another state to spend your money when you need to be giving it back to where you
Come
got
on.
It from.
Come on. Darlene, to bring on what you're saying, you're absolutely right. You know what? I'm going to say something. I don't mind if my pastor has a yacht. I don't care if he has a Cadillac Seville or three. I really don't care. But if you can open up his trunk and see that he got a box of flyers talking about a community program that my kid can go to, or he has a whole basket of food to deliver in that yacht, we're all good.
I know that's right.
If he's using that yacht,
that's right. But all you hear is that I was in that. You know, we was in our yacht. I was so okay. Now that you was in your yacht, then that means you should be storing a lot of food up in there. So where is it?
Yes, their job is as a community beacon. It's to feed the sheep, and it doesn't necessarily mean with food. It means that you have a job to do to make your community that you are stationed in. Correct.
Better.
I see you, caller. I'm going to bring you in just a minute. You have an obligation. When you're taking money, when you're taking up real estate space that could have been somebody's home, when you are taking up time to say that you're bringing in people to give them soul food or house food or whatever the case is, your damn obligation is not to do all that and have a time frame on when you're tired of doing it. Your job, if you are going to continue to take up space and register yourself with any facility or state that you're in, okay, to state that you're doing this service, you need to continually do that service.
But let me just say this, Katie. Anytime you, a person like myself, I don't have no real money, and I work hard for my money. But you know what? When I pay my bills, I don't have no real money left. Not many people do. And then for you to turn around and make me feel less than because I can't keep up with the Joneses, right? Because I don't have $50. I don't have $100 to give. And you pass the plate 30 times a day, and I'm supposed to put money in every 30 times, and then I'm supposed to be with a smile, and you won't even shake my hand. You won't even tug me. You won't even put your hand across my forehead with some blessed oil and pray for me unless I'm paying you. That is not how it's supposed to go.
No, it's not. I do need to bring our other panelists in because the show's winding down a little bit, so hang on. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, everybody. This is Professor Carl Tone Jones calling from Philadelphia.
Hey, welcome.
Hello.
Hello. It's tonight's show sponsor. It's tonight's show sponsor, and I do appreciate it once again. All right, Professor, weigh in.
You know, the whole idea of the church and the black community goes way back to the days when the church was used to maintain the plantation, okay? And I'm talking strictly about slavery. As the years have progressed, as the times have progressed, and I'm really moving forward through this fast because I realize that this show is low on time, the church had become a central focus of the black community where people could go and get needs met and dealt with and look for spiritual guidance and leadership. But it would also be a place where if, say, there was an issue in the community, most times people met up at the church. The church served that purpose. The church was also there for people who, if, say, you know somebody that was having trouble with feeding their family, well, the church would pick up a collection to help that person feed their family. If you knew somebody that was having trouble paying their bills, well, the church would also, you know, make a call to help out in those situations. And we see it in, through the evolution of the church, nowadays, you really can't tell the difference, and I'm talking about the institution of the black church, between the church and pimping and prostitution in terms of what's happening in the communities. Because what's happening is instead of the church meeting the needs of the community, the church is leeching off of the community so that the community can meet the needs of the church. And the church's expansion and the church's growth is not, it's no longer a community-based thing. Churches now are trying to be international, where there are branches of churches in, all over the country, all over the world, and they're all about growing. And you need money to grow. And where do you get the money? But from the community.
That's right.
And all well and good. It's that whoever is shuffling papers and talking in the background, and please mute your phones. You're absolutely right, Professor, on that one. But if you're going to be a community-based person and you're going to grow in quantity, you need to give back in quality. That's the way I see it. And this, like I said, let's take the religious aspect of it all off. You know, let's look at it as what it is, a community beacon. If you are going to register yourself as a tax-exempt, here we go, a tax-exempt community.
Who is that?
I don't know. If you're going to register yourself as a tax-exempt community facility who's given services and need this, every business needs to bring its own money back into it so that it can flourish on the outside
well,
again.
Well, CK, you just mentioned something.
Mm-hmm.
Churches didn't always become 501c's. They just became 501c's under the Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand, in order to become a 501c, you have to adhere to certain rules and regulations. You know, there's a part of the church that a lot of us aren't talking about, and that's because there is
political
a secret law. Contract with the government, with a lot of it's called the Council of Clergy, the Clergy Council, and whereas the government meets with pastors of churches all over the country. And they have an understanding that if there's ever a crisis, that the government is to receive the full support of the pastors in these churches, of the clergy in these churches, so that if there is ever a government, like say, let's just say we have some type of a situation where there's a lockdown in the government is expecting the pastors they're going to pass on instructions to be delivered by the pastors in the church. And so when you talk about the 501c and the actual contract that the pastors and the churches are signing with the government, that's also leading to the term where churches no longer care for the community. I mean, when you look at it, come on, let's just look at it for a second. you had churches now, within a 5-block radius, you may have 15 churches.
Yeah.
You know, so how is everybody serving the community? And those would be the 5 worst blocks in the neighborhood, you know, where all the crime and stuff is going on. So the whole idea now is that we have recognizing that the church is no longer benefiting the community. The community has to start pulling its resources and looking elsewhere to get their support for the community.
The community needs to sit up there and make these churches do what they're supposed to do. That's what it is. Every Sunday we service, or every whatever we service. It's no longer just opening your doors for an hour on Wednesdays to have people line up in any type of weather to get cans of food. Okay, and even that I will give credence to, because plenty of people have survived off of that without having no other options. So for those that even do that, I give kudos to. But understand, as I mentioned earlier, Professor, I know you just joined us, the community resources and the community services that a church once did for our community was way more than just that. Let's talk about the stuff that's not physical. Let's talk about what's important beyond just what the tangibility of everything. But what about, like I mentioned earlier, a kid that's in trouble that normally wouldn't be. Something's going on. They can't reach out to their parents. There used to be a time when a mother could say, you know what, Pastor, this is what's going on, and send the kid to the pastor. That is moral fiber. That's strengthening. That's doing something. They have some place to go. What about the... I don't know what that is, but if it's an electronic device, you shouldn't watch. Okay, if it was that, what about the fact that when this kid was getting bullied, there was a support structure in the church that told them bullying is a bad thing? What about, like you just said, donations for people, a father who just lost his job that's trying to be a good father to his family but can't deal with the fact that what he feels is part of his manhood was taken away by a layoff?
Well, You bring up a lot of great points, and that goes back into the whole mission of the church now. The mission of the church is no longer concerned with the issues of the community. In most parts, you do have some small churches, local churches, that do what they can on meager resources, but they're being dwarfed by these mega churches. Now, the mega churches not only have access to you while you're at church now. With the ways of technology, the mega churches can hit you up at your house, you know, via the internet. You can stream church service. You can send a check, or you can stream. You can send money, email, or just by the click of a mouse stroke. So, the need is no longer based on what the community needs. It's about building up the church, the image of the church. And now that's what's sold. Don't you want to beautify our church? Don't you want to don't you want to be able to tell people you come to a beautiful church? Look at our parking lot. Look at the grass that we have on our lawns. Look at all this, that, and the other. And it's never really focused. And I'm talking about the mega churches now. I'm not talking about the small church. I'm talking about the mega churches. They're never truly focused on building the community, because it's already sold to people that it sold to people on the whole mantra that your heaven is coming. It's not here yet. So your heaven is not here yet. So people are people realize right now, and now you go to most sermons, you'll hear about the end days. These are the end days, and these are the 7 years of hell that we're all supposed to go through. And people just assume now that they're supposed to be suffering during this time, and they don't ask for anything, they don't want for anything, because they fall in line. You know, the pastor's word is still the end-all, be-all when it comes to the church. So, you know, you have all these different psychologies, and believe me, you know, you have to go to school with theology just to be a pastor. So there's also schools of thought and training and psychology on how to gain the attention of the masses. And it's an ongoing process. I know this because my pastor divulged a lot of this information during some of his sermons. So,
and I do have to say, Taylor, I know you're trying to come in. Just give me one second. I know that
That's what's being said. And once again, Professor, it's all back to the Sunday service situation. And Sunday service is not only where the community is at. Most of the people in the community don't even go to service on Sundays, but the church is still there on a weekly, daily basis.
Daily, no, Katie. That's not what I mean.
I know what you meant. Let me finish my point. What I meant was, okay, we as a community who don't attend the Sunday service to hear about the biblical aspects of the final days. I'm a believer, and I know all about it. I believe a lot of things going on have already been predicted. But I'm speaking on the fact that we, this panel right here, we are aware, right? We need to be out there explaining to them that, so we're supposed to be suffering, but yet at the same time, this is what's being said. This is what you said you would do. What does that have to do with the fact that we don't have after-school programs anymore? What happens with the fact that you, regardless of whether or not we're supposed to be suffering, you've been eating Sunday dinner at my house for 3 years, and now suddenly we don't know who you are anymore when you need us? This is the thing that we need. We need to get back into the church walls to have those meetings again or protest to these leaders. You can't just take up space in a neighborhood that's deteriorating around you.
Right.
Well, that's what's happening. And not only that, I'm sorry, Kate, one of the things that you're not really understanding is the whole, we're talking about years and years and generations of practices, norms, that we're trying to overcome in a conversation or two. We're trying to overcome and about, you know, you can put this stuff in front of somebody.
Well,
and they're still looking
overcome
at you like you're, huh?
But I say this is how we, I believe this is how we overcome it, though. This is how we moving forward. How we overcome it is, first we have to demystify a lot of things that have been going on with it. First of all, the churches have always been self-sustaining because of the members, absolutely. So we call it on the members, we call it on the churches, everybody surrounding the church whatsoever. But we're saying that when they became 501(c), okay, that's versus being, you know, described as a secret contract. It's a
nonprofit organization.
Corporation. It's an articles of corporation, and it's a board members, three or more, and it's a couple bucks. That's what it is. That's what that 501(c) was. Now, see, that didn't just give them the right to not pay taxes because they weren't doing that anyway, okay, under law, most law anyway. But what happened is they got access to a pool of federal money and grant money. These churches are not even applying for the grant money out here, so it's getting cut. We're not forcing them to apply for it as well. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Why is there no more programs? Come on. Why are there so many people with no jobs and no programs and a church?
And no food and a troubled kid and struggling with clothes. And struggling with clothes and educational problems. And why are schools closing around you and you're in a facility that has access and connections to things that schools deal with? Why is that? There is some government to church connection at some point. Why aren't we making sure that these people we service and come to every single week or with the idea or perceived whatever, why are we sitting back and allowing 17 schools in a district to close on a mass level? Why are we doing that? And then on top of that, why aren't churches out there, if that's the case and they can't fight the government, why aren't churches offering some sort of homeschooling situation where they can say, okay, we're not going to leave our kids behind, so if the government don't want to give us public facilities, we'll empower parents or bring parents' kids here while they work and we'll school them with certified people. If there was a point in time where after-school programs were led for 2 to 3 hours a week or whatever the case was by people who were accredited to do so, there's no reason why it can't happen now. And the only reason why it's not happening is because we're not speaking up.
Yep.
The only reason why it's not happening. We are grumbling in the corner about the greedy pastor. We're grumbling in the corner about what white corporation America is not doing. We're grumbling. Enough already.
That's a microcosm of the entire community, though. You know, that one example is the microcosm as to why so much is failing in the black community right now. You know, we see it, and nobody, I'm not going to say nobody, too few of us have the courage to speak up and speak truth to power, even when it's within our own community.
That I'll give you. But it does take one person to show some guts, because that's the way we are as a human nature. Nobody is going to be the first person, but we do need to have the one person who can listen. You know what I feel? As much as I've heard that too many people are afraid to speak up, tell me what those Facebook conversations are about.
Well, it's
I
about
see so many
that,
people.
You just answered it.
Porno.
Well, you just answered it, Katie. The Facebook conversations is the easy way out. It's just like having a petition.
But
it's the easy way out.
You've got to be pretty lacking in common sense to think that if you don't say anything to people, let's say it's a neighborhood of, 1,700 people. If you are too afraid to speak to 1,700 people, but you have no fear of putting on a post seen by 17 million people, something is wrong here somewhere.
Well, yeah, it's really simple.
Because you've been delusioned by virtual reality.
Yeah, yeah, really. You don't have to face anybody in terms of that. I mean, you're not face-to-face with anybody, and that's when all the bravery takes place. And, when you're not face-to-face, you can say whatever you want. There's really no consequences to it. You don't have to look anybody in the eye, and that's that. But to actually get out there and say, let's just be real. Our community does not have the best history of actually backing up its own. So when people go out there and stand out there on their own, there's a lot of people. I mean, this is off topic, but just look at the Richard Sherman situation that's going on in pro football right now, where the man had a 30-second interview. He didn't scream or cuss at Aaron Andrews, who was interviewing him for ESPN. He was for Fox Network. He wasn't cursing at her. He was excited. He just made the game-winning play. Now this brother's getting death threats. He's getting all types of people, just calling him all types of N-words all over the media. And I was listening to sports talk in here in Philadelphia and nationally. And you have black people calling up excusing why whites should be offended by his response.
And frankly, he directed it at something that took place that the person did to him first. He still had the class to not say exactly what the incident was, but his brother did. I didn't see anything that he said that wasn't part of normal trash sports talk that is causing all this commotion. I saw that he just got a fine for $7,825 or $75, I guess. Because he was going, I saw this, and once again, like you said, our people are calling and excusing it. Look, enough already. Regardless of what, start small. He's an NFL player. $7,000 for him is like a dime to us.
No. That's not the point. The point is he stuck out on the line.
They're trying to emasculate him.
Yes,
What I'm trying to say, and I get where you're coming from because it is an outrage, what I'm saying is everybody stood up there and found time to go on to a network that they'll never meet these people they speak to talk against this young man, okay? But nobody comes into their small, tiny community to talk to a person that needs to make a difference. Mm-hmm.
Because we get outraged for the wrong reasons.
So maybe we all should get dressed up like NFL players and stand in our local bodegas and start talking. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, we could do that.
I know, that's right.
Well, one of the things that it shows, though, is that even when one of us do stand up publicly, the rest of the community is still splintered on supporting them. Now you take that and then you magnify that into something that's real close and personal, you stand up in front of the church and you call the pastor out on not providing, and you call the clergy out on not providing for your community, and then you look into the crowd to see who's going to stand up with you, and then you turn around, maybe 3-4 people stand up out of a congregation of 1,000 people. You know, that's emasculating, but that's what happens. And because
it's
right
there.
What
can happen with that scenario is that you can go, we socialize all through the summer, the fall, and the spring with people within our community, with people on our blocks. We talk to people on a daily basis. If that was the case for that scenario, there would be a petition, and just like you talk and say good morning and everything all day, every day to everybody that you pass by, you can stop them and say, hold on for a minute. We're starting something new in our community. This is a petition that we can come together, join forces, so our institution that's in our community, which is our church, can stand up for something and stand up for the community in itself. Before you even take that, what you do is you prepare for that. And then when you present your issue, you won't be alone.
Well, sister, I agree with your sentiment. I truly do. And if you know anything about my message, I talk about that all the time. The point that I'm trying to make is even in those situations, when it comes time to face the beast, a lot of people shrivel up in the moment. And
yes.
A lot of our people shrivel up in the moment. And that is the unfortunate reality that we are dealing with, and that's what we have to address. So when you pick those people, you have to pick strong people who are a little bit pissed off like you are about the situation.
Yes.
Because if you find somebody that's halfway in and halfway out, when it comes time to standing in front of that person who they've looked up to for a long time in their life versus taking a stance with you, they've seen this person lead. They've seen this person, whether they lead them down the wrong road or not, they've seen them lead. They haven't seen you lead yet.
But you know what? Can I say something? And I'm gonna be quiet after this. Even with that being said, and that was, and I truly agree with you on that. However, like just for today, paper talks for you, black and white. Like what I could do in that scenario is like I would get my family members who believe in what I believe in and is willing to fight for what I fight for, and they're willing to take that stand. And so what if I walk in there with 5 people, but I got 25,000 signatures?
Thank you.
That's a good
point. I just
personally think that our community is torn and has been for a long time. A lot of us just don't want to create no waves for fear of what the next person is going to think of them, or maybe they might sacrifice losing their jobs if they say the wrong thing. See, we just concerned with too many things that could happen to us opposed to actually being true to who we are and standing up for what we really, really believe in. You know, like even in a job setting, you can have people who watch. It doesn't have to be anybody black or anybody white. I'm just saying in a general. You could have a supervisor that's the nastiest, this most disrespectful person ever, and not only to you, but to everybody who is under her or him. You understand? And because this happened to me. Soon as I stood up for myself, even though the same thing happened to the whole lot of them, nobody was willing to say nothing. Why? Because they wanted to keep their job. They were afraid of what could happen if they said, and, you know, all of these other little ifs. We're afraid of ifs. If I say this, this could happen, that could happen. Instead of just saying, you know what?
I'll take that.
This
chance.
Is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going for it. Mm-hmm. This is what I believe in.
And I know I'm right with it, because, see, with me, if I'm right, I'll die. If I'm wrong, I'm going to shut up. You understand what
okay.
I'm saying? But people don't believe in anything strongly. Like we used to have strong beliefs, we don't have those. And that's where you get the initiative, and that's where you pull the resources within yourself. You got to believe in something first. And we don't believe. So that's why we're not there.
Well, I'd like to cut everybody short. We are down to 3 minutes. And I want to thank every one of you for your viewpoints tonight. I want to thank those of you that called in, to all of you that were helping in the pre-broadcast discussion. I want to thank all of you. And I will say again, you know, shutting up and you know, doing the cash and carry thing and allowing things to just blow up around you, it's not the way that we're going to make anything happen. But you churches need to get off the TVs and back into the neighborhood. We need you in the streets, not on the screen. And that's my final point on the evening. So once again, all of you, thank you very much. Go Knicks. Go Knicks. Go Knicks.
Yeah.
Go Knicks. 125 to 96.
Go Sixers.
About time. I was going to put them in the garbage.
Well, to all of you that's sitting on out with me in New York, stay safe. Those of you dealing with snow, stay safe. I know it's a pain in the butt. Frankly, I like the snow. I just don't like to get caught in it. But all of you, be out there. Be a blessing. Be blessed. Make a difference. Okay? Good night, everybody.
Good night.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.